Good afternoon, and welcome to Coastal Conversations here on WERU. We explore issues facing Maine's coastal communities through dialogue with people who live, work, and play on our coast. From fisheries to tourism, from energy to environment, from economy to ecology, we go beyond the social media soundbites, probing deeply into complex issues and solutions. Coastal Conversations is supported by Maine Sea Grant, in partnership with Skudik Institute and the First Coast. My name is Tegan Paulson. Today's episode will focus on the lobster fishery. Specifically, we'll talk with fishermen about their perspectives on tighter trap limits. For several decades now, there have been some within the lobster fishery who support cutting the number of traps lobstermen are allowed to operate. As costs rise and landings falter, some argue there has never been a better time to cut back. Okay, we'll get to that in a bit, but first, let's get a quick debrief on the lobster fishery. A lot has happened in the last 40 years, and here to walk us through it is Robin Alden. She founded Commercial Fisheries News in 1973 and served as the Department of Marine Resources Commissioner from 1995 to 1997. Robin says lobster landings really started to rise in the 80s and 90s as the ground fishery collapsed. Ground fishermen were getting into lobstering as ground fish became harder to find. It was a natural industry for them to shift to.
They were already part of it because many of them had lobster as kids or had lobstered part-time while they were ground fishing.
Robin says the state rules and management of the lobster fishery mimic the traditional ways. They allow a level of local autonomy over the fishery in a method known as co-management. State waters are separated into seven lobster zones. Each zone has a council made up of elected license holders. These councils have some authority to manage trap limits and the times of day traps can be hauled. Council meetings also act as forums of discussion between fishermen and the DMR, and occur a couple of times a year. All this was established in 1995 by what has been dubbed the Lobster Law.
What the lobster rules have done is allow us to use that population explosion over a period of time pretty responsibly. Because the zones go out to 25 miles and because mobility between zones is constrained, we don't have all of Portland and southern Maine boats down here where the pulse of abundance is right now. And likewise, we weren't down there when it was down there.
Robin lives in Stonington. So when she says we have a pulse of abundance, she's referring to the Deer Isle area. Deer Isle is in Lobster Zone C, and it's the largest lobstering center in the state. It's been protected from boats in other areas by the zone rules. But the 1995 Lobster Law established more than just the zone councils. It also looked to address problems raised by federal regulators.
State of Maine was under a lot of pressure from the feds to do something about the trap limit and the lack of limited entry, which is part of the forcing mechanism that allowed the state, when I was commissioner, to do something about both of those things, but to do it in a really different way than would have happened if we hadn't been there with some creative ideas. It would have been, you know, probably eventually a quota and a limited entry with buying and selling licenses. And I was determined that we not go down that route.
Instead of a quota, Maine uses a quilt of other regulations that limit which lobsters can be landed. Egg-bearing lobsters are protected and notched to indicate their status when they aren't bearing eggs. That helps make sure as many lobsters are hatched each year as possible. In addition, lobsters outside of a certain size range are off-limits, protecting both the youngest and oldest lobsters from harvesting. And the number of traps a lobsterman can fish is limited to 800. Most lobstermen these days endorse these regulations, but that wasn't always the case. Lobstermen were incredibly divided in the 80s and 90s when these measures were being discussed.
And there were knockdown, drag-out fights over 20-year period over size limits and vents, whether to have vents at all. You know, the myth that lobstermen are always conservation oriented is it's a myth, but it's also a culture. So it's both things are true, and they can be true at the same time.
Lobstermen and their advocates are vocal about their efforts as conservationists. Many claim that lobstermen helped institute all their own regulations. Now, to say that lobstermen as a whole were on board is a bit misleading, but it is true to an extent. Some lobstermen have been involved in most of the regulations Maine has passed in the last 3 decades, and that includes the biggest organization representing lobstermen in the state.
When I was commissioner, there was very strong feeling on the part of Maine Lobstermen's Association, which was the principal lobbyist group, that we needed to cut traps across the board, that a smart fisherman could catch the same with fewer traps, but that we weren't going to entitle people who had been fishing 2,000, 3,000 traps. I'm not sure that that sense, those values would hold across the board now.
Trap limits are going to be the main topic for the rest of the episode. Specifically, we'll be looking at stricter trap limits as a management idea and how lobstermen are thinking about it. But let's get the pitch straight from the source. This is David Cousins. He graduated college with an education degree in 1980 and went straight back home to start lobstering. He's been doing that ever since.
I was president of the Maine Lobster Association for 27 years. So I've been involved in almost all of the conservation measures we've put in place since 1990.
Dave has supported tighter trap limits for decades. The position hasn't always been popular, but he thinks that might be changing.
Now I think it's becoming much more popular because people are looking at the cost of going to fish. And people are spending over $50,000 to $60,000 a year. Some are spending $100,000 a year for bait. They're spending $20,000 to $30,000 a year for fuel. Traps are $150 a piece. So people's minds are evolving. I've actually had a lot of people come up and says, we need to go to a trap limit. You're going to see people just go out of business because the cost of doing business with a decrease in catch, it gets to the point where you're not making any money.
Finances are often on the minds of most lobstermen. But if you have a big new boat, it's even more of a concern. The kinds of boats people are investing in to take offshore can leave lobstermen with up to $1 million in debt. To keep up with their loan payments, they need to keep fishing hard. But Dave thinks the number of traps lobstermen are allowed shouldn't be too major of a concern, even for those with hefty loan payments.
People have bought big boats to go offshore, not because of the trap number. They bought big boats to be safe 40 miles offshore when it's blowing 25 and 30. Really, I mean, you look at Canada, they got boats that are 45 feet long that are 23, 24 feet wide. I mean, they're huge boats, and they're only fishing 270 traps.
Canada was where Dave began to come around to the idea of tighter trap limits. He'd been meeting with Canadian lobstermen because the dealers were playing Maine and Canada off each other.
I remember one example the dealers told us in the 90s that, well, the price is so low because Prince Edward Island is nailing the lobsters, so we have to put the price down. Well, they were iced in. They weren't even fishing.
The fishermen were trying to verify what the dealers told them. This was all pre-internet, so they were meeting together in person, and they really got to know each other. They worked together, and they agreed to set up price reporting, so the Canadian lobstermen would know what the Mainers were catching, and the Mainers would know what the Canadians were catching. And during these conversations, Dave learned about how Canadians did their lobstering. Canada's 41 zones are open seasonally, usually for 8 weeks. This opposed to Maine, where it's legal to fish year-round. And they fish fewer traps in Canada. Their Gulf of Maine areas are allowed up to 300 or 400 traps, depending on the zone. Remember, in Maine, you can fish up to 800.
They have the same fishery we do. They use the same traps we do. They use the same bait we do. They use the same boats we do. The only thing different is they're across the border. There's nothing different with the animal or the fishery, other than, you know, weather is different, you know, and where they fish sometimes is deeper or shallower, but it's the same fishery.
In 2016, Dave and some others at the MLA decided younger Maine lobstermen could learn from Canada's way of lobstering. He got some funding, and off they went to Nova Scotia, a handful of MLA folks and 30 or so young lobstermen.
We decided it's time to, like, get some kids up there and see that you can catch lobsters with a lot less traps and a lot less overhead, a lot less bait. We're not advocating that you go to a 8-week season, which they have in Prince of the Island, but we just want to show the kids that they have 270 traps and they haul them every day. And they catch in 8 weeks what a lot of people in Maine catch in a year. We're not advocating to go to a derby fishery, but we just want them to see that you don't need 800 traps to make a living. We took 3 vans, and I think we took about 30 people up there, kids, and we had Patrice and I, and I think Kristen Porter. We had like 3 or 4 chaperones because they were all, you know, in their 20s, and we knew it could be a disaster, but it worked out fine. We made them stay with fishermen, so they were pretty much watched at night.
Dave's goal was to expose the next generation of lobstermen to other methods of lobstering. Atlantic Canada was able to catch plenty of lobster with far fewer traps and far less bait. They'd haul their 300 or so traps more often, so the bait didn't need to last as long. You're listening to WERU Community Radio at 89.9 FM and streaming online at weru.org. This is Coastal Conversations. 1998 brought the first trap limits to Maine's waters. The law was 800 traps by the year 2000, and most zones cut traps gradually, 1,200 in 98, then 1,000, then finally down to 800. Dave says for some, it took a little getting used to.
It was really unpopular when that first went in, but after it happened, everyone goes, wow, I'm doing just as good with 800 as I did with 1,300.
The trap limit, meant to reel in some of the most intense fishing, had an unintended effect. The number of traps in the water actually increased, and that meant more ghost gear, more lines, and more fishing effort. At the time, most traditional lobstermen were fishing something to the tune of several hundred traps. Few were actually fishing 800 or more, just a small minority fishing upwards of a couple thousand traps. But when the limit went in, 800 became a goal for everyone fishing less than that. That caught proponents of the trap limit a little by surprise.
But when they put a target in of 800, almost all those people that fished 300 and 400 went to 8, and there were more that went from 300 or 400 to 8 than there was from over 8 coming down. So it was a net gain of traps.
Robin Alden, who we spoke with earlier, said there were lobstermen who warned her they'd be going to 800. At the time, most advocates for the policy expected the limit to continue coming down. But political will had faltered, and that never happened.
The less trap density, the more you catch per trap. So if you went from 800 to 600, it would be a 25% reduction in traps if everyone did it. You'd do a little better per trap, but probably not phenomenally better. But if you went to 400 traps, took 50% of the traps out of the water, you would do a lot better per trap. And with a lower price, the only way we get to make more money is pounds per trap. We can't increase our profitability because we have fixed costs with boat, trap, bait, fuel, sternmen. So if we can increase pounds per trap, that's where we make profit.
The impact of fewer traps on catch is probably the most important question to fishermen. Dave argues that with fewer traps in the water, lobstermen would catch more in each trap they hauled. And at 400 traps, a lobsterman could cut their gear expenditures in half. You might even spend a little less on bait, though that probably depends on how fast the bait disappears from your traps in the first place.
We would catch the same amount of lobsters in the course of a year. We just do it over a longer period of time, which would be better for the market, be better for the price, because you wouldn't have glots. You wouldn't have when everyone's coming in with, you know, 800, 1,000 pounds a day when they're soft. It's a problem. The market can't handle that, and the quality is not that great, so we get paid a lot less for them.
The biggest concern is still landings. There are some indications the next few years could be rough for lobster landings. The state collects settlement data. Basically, they monitor how many lobster larvae stick around long enough to grow up. Those numbers started to slump in 2016 and 2017, and though they're up again recently, the ones settling now won't be harvestable for another 5 or 6 years. For now, we're stuck harvesting the smaller pre-pandemic cohorts. Dave is pretty sold on reduced trap limits as a way of addressing this. Others, however, are still getting a feel for it. Many younger fishermen and those going offshore are skeptical of the idea.
The young kids can't envision doing less and making the same. That's what it amounts to. If you put 10 hours a day in at a job and you get paid overtime, you know what you're going to get. With lobstering, it's like, I got to haul 400 a day or I can't make a living. Well, if you take half the traps out of the area you're fishing, yes, you can.
While the average age of the lobster fleet is getting older, younger lobstermen still make up a strong group within the industry. In a system of co-management, that means they get a say in how the fishery is run. Our next guest is one of these younger lobstermen, and he comes from a unique area to fish for lobster.
My name's Marshall Walker. I fish out of Swan's Island.
Marsh is in his 20s. He's been fishing basically his whole life.
Yeah, I've been fishing for lobster, like, in some form since I was, like, a little kid. But I didn't really start going, you know, as my job till I got out of high school, so, like, 2018.
Swan's Island, where Marsh fishes, is one of the largest year-round offshore communities in Maine. It's about 4 miles southwest of Mount Desert Island. Around 350 people live on the island through the winter, and that population nearly triples in the summer. There's a ferry service that runs several times a day, but every now and then the ferry breaks down and people get stuck.
And there has been times where the ferry ramp has been messed up for a while, so that's a big nuisance, and then just the cost of ferry tickets is a slight extra burden.
Particularly if you get stuck off island for the night. You might need to get a hotel room, eat dinner, etc., a trip to the grocery store can quickly turn into a couple $100 excursion. Basically everybody living on Swan's Island year-round either works in the lobster industry or they earn their money from people who do. That's starting to change a little bit. Since the COVID pandemic, a few people on Swan's have picked up remote work. But the community is still intensely dependent on lobstering to bring in money. In the early 2010s, a group of lobstermen from the island decided it would help to cut the number of traps they were fishing. But they couldn't do it alone. So they proposed the Swan's Island Conservation Zone, an area that initially would allow a maximum of only 475 traps. Now, this has since been raised to 600 since it was passed by the legislature in 2012, but it's still much lower than the rest of Lobster Zone B.
So I'm fishing 600, and I make my living at it, but I have a smaller boat than a lot of guys. A lot of times I take less crew, and you know, I also buy less trap gear, buy less rope, less buoys.
Marshall's point here is that if lobstermen purchase less gear, it'll hurt the businesses that manufacture that gear.
Swan's Island, you know, they wanted the conservation zone. I don't think that necessarily means it would work in the rest of the state. You know, it's different types of fishing, different styles of fishing. And you got to remember, just a few years ago, Swan's Island Conservation Zone wanted more traps and they got more traps. So I think more traps, more lobsters.
Certainly, every younger lobsterman I've had a chance to speak with is fishing hard. Many of them believe they need the 800 traps they're allowed, particularly when they go offshore. Then there's Josh Kane, a lobsterman from Bar Harbor. He's only had his own license for a few years, but he's been a sternman for decades.
I go back and forth on trap limits because there's certain areas that have trap limits and those guys catch lobsters. And it seems to me that if everybody gets cut across the board, then you're going to catch the same amount, more lobsters, but just less traps because the lobsters are all still there.
As the rapid expansion of lobster has slowed, lobstermen are starting to feel the squeeze. And there's some real risk in this. Fishermen, by and large, are fiercely committed to their industry. There's a love for the work they do day after day, even considering the challenges. When groundfish collapsed, those fishermen switched to lobstering. If lobster goes, there's not really another option that could support thousands of lobstermen.
Lobster is the last thing that's going to be economically viable for an entire like section of the state. A guy like me, you know, I can go maybe catch green crabs, I can go to Massachusetts, I can go scalloping, I can do something else, but even that's on its way out now.
Despite all this, Josh actually isn't too concerned about the lobster fishery. Landings are down, but lobstermen knew there'd be a few tough years here. State settlement data is the most common citation for that. We talked a little bit about that earlier, but let's go over the details. Settlement is when a lobster larva becomes a young lobster. They stop drifting with the current and begin foraging about the ocean floor. The state does a count to estimate how many larvae are settling in Maine's waters. Previous years indicated fewer lobsters settling, and it takes about 6 years for those young lobsters to grow to a legal size. We're hitting those age groups now. But Josh thinks there are also other factors leading to lower landings, other than just fewer lobsters.
Our lobster landings are dropping, but we also have what is known as the graying of the fleet. There's a lot of older fishermen. There are guys that I've watched my whole life go to the walls, and now they're older, and they're slacking up, and they're not catching the poundage that they used to catch. They're financially successful. They've been fishing 30, 40 years, so they're not going as hard.
Recently, some lobstermen have been going back and forth with the DMR over the issue of lower landings. That's because in 2024, a federal management body, the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, or the ASMFC, decided to require a new regulation increasing the minimum legal size for lobsters. They did this because their stock assessment survey, that's the study they conduct to estimate how many lobsters are in the waters under their jurisdiction, indicated a 35% decrease in lobster populations between 2023 and 2024. Increasing the minimum legal size of harvestable lobsters was considered by the ASMFC as a way to protect a bit more of the remaining lobsters. Here's how that works. When a fisherman catches a lobster, they use a measuring device to check the size of that lobster. If it's over 5 inches or under 3 1/4 inches, they throw it back into the ocean. This new rule would mean the smallest lobster a fisherman could sell would get bigger, by 1/16 of an inch. Now, the way the ASMFC works is it regulates states, not fishermen. It has no enforcement capabilities of its own, so it relies on states to remain in compliance by passing policies through their own governments. If states don't comply, the ASMFC has the ability to basically shut down the fishery in question. In this particular case, they set a deadline for July 2025. All the discussions with lobstermen and the DMR came as Maine tried to decide how it was going to respond. Many lobstermen came forward against the rule, and in January, the DMR announced it was withdrawing Maine's policy proposal that would keep the state in compliance with ASMFC's rule. That came after months of debate between lobstermen and the department. Fishermen are on the front line of their fishery, both on and off the water. As a group, they represent a block of knowledge that cannot always be replicated by scientific assessments. They understand the movements of the species they harvest on an intimate level, and they see changes specific to their local waters.
We're scientists just like you. Every day I go out there, it's a science experiment. Am I putting my trap here? What's the water temperature? What's the bait? You know, what time of year is it? What did I see last time? Hard bottom, soft bottom. And so we're doing experiments too. And so just don't discount everything we say and treat us like we're trying to catch every last lobster. I mean, we do have a business and a bottom line. Take that into account, absolutely. You know, don't give us free rein.
Remember, Maine uses a system known as co-management. Lobstermen in the state are jointly responsible for the lobster resource. This method combines the DMR's enforcement capabilities and scientific expertise with lobstermen's local knowledge and fishing effort. Together, they help Maine produce large quantities of protein and bring significant economic activity to the coast. Co-management requires engagement from the community in order to be effective, but it can be a long, slow process and sometimes requires difficult compromises.
Changing a fishery is, it's like moving a heavy stone, you know, like once these things start rolling one way, it's almost impossible to turn it another direction.
Like Josh says, managing a fishery can be an immensely frustrating process. The stakes are incredibly high. Fishermen's livelihoods are on the line, but it goes much further than that. Seafood is caught by fishermen, shipped by truck drivers, turned into a retail product by processors, and then sold to consumers by restaurants and retailers. All of these people who just made their money because of the fishing industry then go and spend that money in their local communities. In some towns along the coast, fishing is basically the only thing bringing money into the community. Bar Harbor, Rockland, these places might be okay, but Swan's Island, Frenchboro, even Stonington? The fishing industry supports such a massive proportion of their economies that the very heart of the community could cease to exist. Much of the Maine coast is relying on getting lobster right. Co-management is the structure in place to make that happen. So far, it has allowed coastal Maine to ride the growing lobster population. But as landings appear to have plateaued or even begun to decline, the management system could be facing a new, more challenging era. An era where populations aren't growing so rapidly. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Coastal Conversations, looking at trap limits in the Maine lobster fishery. If you'd like to hear other episodes of Coastal Conversations, join us on the fourth Friday of each month at 4 p.m. for information, stories, and conversations about the issues and people of the Maine coast. That great music you're hearing in the background is called A Following Sea and was composed and performed by Paul Anderson. Thank you to Robin Alden, David Cousins, Marshall Walker, and Joshua Kane for agreeing to share their perspectives. And thank you to Galen Koch and Natalie Springle for their assistance in the production of this episode. My name is Tegan Paulson, and on behalf of Maine Sea Grant and in partnership with Skudik Institute and the First Coast, we wish you a good weekend.